evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. Today is August 20th, 2007, and on this date, in 1955, an Air Force pilot, whose name happened to be Haynes, flew to an altitude of 40,000 feet. Highest that any person had ever flown in a jet. And what's interesting about this is what I like about these inventions and these dates is that it gives us a way to mark the march of human progress, in this case technological progress. 40,000 feet was a record in 1955. Of course, we didn't have real sophisticated jets back there. But now you go on any decently long flight and you're cruising at about 33,000. So today, jetliners carrying hundreds of people cruise at almost the altitude that was the highest they could reach in 1955. I just find that interesting. And also, today is the birthday of Don King, as well as Isaac Hayes, Black Moses, a musician from the 60s, 70s. Kind of a guy. He's probably still around, but I don't hear too much about him these days. Anyway, tonight we've got a number of things to talk about. And as always, I start with the lighter stuff, but we're going to spend a little bit of time on the whole situation in Iraq and the surge, because we're hearing a lot of good reports about the surge, and yet there may be a fundamental problem, and that is that we can't really solve the Iraqis' problems. So we'll talk a bit about that and what the news is about those issues. We'll also talk about the campaign. Both the Republican and the Democratic campaigns have heated up. And may spend a little bit of time on China. People have started worrying about China. Oh, and of course, Karl Rove, who has been all over the news this week more than Karl Rove. Not even Lindsay Lohan. Rove is all over the place. I just can't believe how much press he's been getting since he announced he's leaving the White House. In any case, let me get started with some lightweight stuff, I guess we'd say. Although death is never lightweight. We had a couple of deaths. I'm not going to spend too much time on the death of talk show Tom Snyder. That was in the last week. But also, Max Roach died. Now, a lot of people may not know him. He was in his 80s, but he was a drummer. And in his era, people argued he was the greatest drummer in the world. He was a modern jazz drummer and basically helped create bebop. And was considered the greatest jazz drummer by his fellow musicians of the time. So Max Roach has passed. And the administrative law judge here in D.C. who filed a $67 million lawsuit against the cleaners that lost his pair of pants, or he claimed they lost his pair of pants. I don't even know how true all that is. That guy is back in the news. So it gets sillier and sillier. You probably heard about this story. They lost his pants. He sued for $67 million. And he wanted court costs and all this. And he's an administrative law judge here in D.C., who, by the way, is up for renewal. And they're trying to decide whether he has the right judicial temperament for this. Yeah. So he's going to lose his job. I don't know why he's so stupid. But the cleaners, and they're a Vietnamese couple who've been, you know, driven crazy by this and just want to settle it. The judge in the case had decreed that the administrative law judge that filed this, by the way, his name is Roy Pearson, has to pay their court costs. I think it was between $10,000 and $20,000. Maybe it was more. And so he's going to have to pay their court costs. Meanwhile, he's thinking of appealing. In the midst of all this, the cleaners, the couple, The Vietnamese couple says, I tell you what, we've had a lot of donations. People want to help us out here because of your stupidity, might I add, here on the radio. They said, we'll let you out of the court costs. You don't have to pay the court costs if you will just drop this whole thing. So instead of incurring a $10,000 to $20,000 debt or more, whatever it is, he could be off scot-free and maybe keep his job if he limited his stupidity. No, he went ahead and filed the appeal. So I hope he gets, he has to pay the court costs in the end. This guy is an idiot. You talk about frivolous lawsuits. This is as frivol as they get, if frivol's a word. Oh, I don't think I want to cover this little story. So there's another issue here in Virginia that's interesting. There is a bad driver fees have been added. They're trying to raise some money. They're trying to limit the damage from bad drivers. So they're starting to penalize you heavily. If you get a ticket at more than 20 miles an hour over the speed limit, there's anywhere from a $300 to $1,000 surcharge added on. Now, we talked about this a few weeks ago. They had them in New Jersey. New Jersey found its insurance fund, $2 billion, in the red when I was living there back, I don't know, 15 years ago. And so they did it clearly as a way to raise money. Here they're claiming it's a safety issue, but they've got these heavy fees from $700 to $1,500 on everything from speeding tickets to having too many points on your license to driving with a suspended license or without insurance or whatever it is. And the problem is that this disproportionately will affect the poor. You know, if you make $200,000 a year and you speed or you get caught with whatever, you know, doing whatever, it's just $1,000. It's a cost to doing business. But there's a lot of people for whom they get a speeding ticket that size and they can't pay it. You know, they might have to sell their car, in other words. And then, of course, you get your license suspended if you don't pay it. So now you can't drive. So it's controversial because this is the law of unintended consequences coming to roost here. They didn't really think about this before they put the law in place in Virginia. Well, the news this week is simply that Texas has had a law like this for a while, and there have been these kinds of problems there. By the same token, the courts, a Richmond judge ruled that the fees are constitutional. Now, there have been two judges already ruled that they're unconstitutional because they disproportionately affect the poor. I'm sorry, the reason that it's unconstitutional is not that. The reason it's unconstitutional is it only applies to Virginia drivers. So if you're coming through Virginia from another state with another license and you get caught speeding, they can't assess these fees against you, apparently. So that's what's unconstitutional, according to the first two judges. Now it's been ruled constitutional. It'll go to the Virginia Supreme Court, and they'll figure it all out. And let's see, Wikipedia is back in the news. So Wikipedia gets in the news every so often, usually not because there's some misinformation published, but because somebody's in there trying to game the system. That is, somebody goes in and changes the entries to be more favorable to someone or something they prefer. If you don't know anything about Wikipedia, it's an online encyclopedia that people write themselves. You can go out and you can edit a Wikipedia entry. You have a favorite musical or movie or band, and you go out and you read the Wikipedia entry and you say, hey, you know, I don't think they really captured the plot line in this movie quite right. I really think it's more about this. You can edit it right there on the spot, no questions asked, and change it. But when it comes to controversial items, everything from abortion to evolution, I suppose evolution is controversial, to, let's say, Walmart, to the biography of anybody in the Senate or the House of Representatives, politicians, to things that it says about the CIA, the FBI, wiretapping, whatever, these things are controversial. Well, what's happened in this most recent thing is that CIA and FBI computers have been used to change entries. See, Wikipedia can trace these back. In fact, there was another article in the last week that there's a new program that someone put out there. I don't think Wikipedia put it out there, that allows you to trace any changes. So if there were recent changes made to a Wikipedia entry, you can use this program online to find out who changed it or which computers they were. So they've traced changes that have been made in, you know, whether it's, you know, a corporate issue, they trace them back to the corporation. So months ago, they limited what Congress could do. They banned all .gov computers, meaning computers with emails where people had emails ending in .gov, that is, you work for the government. They banned them from changing entries because what people were doing was they were going out and saying, you know, Duke Cunningham, let's say he was under indictment at the time. I don't say it happened, but this is just an example. His staff could have gone out and said, you know, I don't really think we want all this negative information in the Wikipedia entry. Let's edit this. And they take out the bad stuff and they pump it up with more good stuff. Well, that happens with corporations too. And it turns out the CIA and the FBI, certain computers have gone out and done that. And I'm trying to remember the other story and who else was out there, changing, these entries. But the program is called Wikipedia Scanner. And CIA computers were used to edit an entry on the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003. And they changed the information about casualties, things like that. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. What Wikipedia often does is they just stop those people, if you have a vested interest in it, they just stop you from doing edits. So we'll see. And let's see. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, I got to decide if we're just going to move on or if we are going to... Actually, you know what? I'll do a cover one more item and then we'll move on. So there was an earthquake in Peru and hundreds of people have been killed, more than 500. And in one particular incident in the town of Pisco, Peru, there were more than 300 people, mostly relatives and friends, filling a church to pay tribute to the head of the family, this popular guy. And he had died, and it was his funeral. And just as the mass was ending, the earthquake happened. And more than 200 of the people there died in the church. But this one guy's family... And I guess it was the guy who died, although they don't make it clear in the article. Yeah, they do. It was the guy who died. His immediate family, all three generations, survived. So I guess about two-thirds of the people died, 200 of the 300 people died, and his immediate family was spared. And so what the people come out of the church saying is, it's a miracle. Well, I have to tell you that I believe in miracles at some level. But it's really interesting that when you just finished Mass, you just finished going to church, you're good Catholics, and I was raised Catholic, I was a seminarian, as many of you know. But when an act of God, as we call it, comes along, an earthquake crushes the church and the ceiling kills 200 people, 200 believers, where's the miracle? It strikes me that you should wonder why God did this to you if you believe that this is an act of God. Instead, they say, it's a miracle that God spared the immediate family. Well, wait a minute. He could have spared everybody. So if the miracle's an act of God, then the earthquake's an act of God. The question that should arise is, why'd he kill the other 200 people? But nobody ever goes there. It's always, we always look on the bright side, you know, and we always use the concept of a miracle when there's something to salvage out of a bad situation. I just think it's unusual the way human nature is about those things. In any case, we'll be back right after this. Hi, I'm Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals, or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells,
the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays at 10 p.m. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station.
It's so true. We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and today is Monday, August 20th, 2007. And on this date in 1985, the original Xerox copier, the 914, the first Xerox copier, was presented to the Smithsonian. And the Xerox is near and dear to my heart for a couple reasons. One, it was invented in my hometown of Rochester, New York, my home city. I was born in Rochester, and I grew up in Webster, New York. And I grew up at 566 Phillips Road, a farmhouse out in the country, just east of Rochester and south of Lake Ontario. And the Haloid Corporation purchased the land a mile away from us and put up their first building in 1956 when I was 6 years old. And I used to pedal my bike past it several times a day, going up to the gas station my dad ran and owned, or up to the village to see friends or whatever, or up to school at the Catholic Church or Catholic school next to the Catholic Church, Holy Trinity. And 4 years later, Haloid Corporation changed their name to Xerox. And there's an interesting story about this that ties into, when I'm doing training on paradigms and paradigm shifts, I often tell the story of Chester Carlson, because the thing about paradigms and paradigm shifts is this. A paradigm is a worldview, okay? So think of it as a set of lenses you have on. And, you know, if you have yellow lenses on, the world just looks yellow to you. And I talk about this on this show in terms of 20 percenters in politics. You know, conservatives have conservative lenses on, liberals have liberal lenses on, and they filter the world through their liberal bias or their conservative bias. And so what happens is you don't even realize it, because if you have yellow lenses on and you have them on all the time, 24 hours a day, after a while you forget that you have yellow lenses on and you just think that's how the world is. It's yellow. No, your lenses have made it yellow. It's the same with conservative and liberal. And the reason I rail against 20 percenters, even though I can be a bit of a liberal myself at times, I do understand the limitations of going too far out on the fringe on either side. So back to paradigms and paradigm shifts and lenses for other purposes. In the world of science, there are lenses or paradigms, right? Until Galileo came along, and Copernicus and Galileo, and said, you know, the Earth isn't the center of everything. In fact, we think there's quite a bit of evidence to suggest that the Earth revolves around the sun. Well, that was heresy, literally, for the Catholic Church. And Copernicus and Galileo were both pressured to renounce their views. Turns out they were right. And that changed everything. As soon as we stopped seeing the Earth as the center of everything, that shifted how people viewed a variety of things. It led to the rise of science. Well, there's more examples of that, of paradigms. And one of the things about paradigms is that people don't see new paradigms coming, all right? The organizations that found the old paradigms will never find the new paradigms. So in the case of, let's take music, all right? The people that were doing the pre-rock and roll were never going to discover rock and roll. That was left to, you know, everybody from Chubby Checker and Bo Diddley and Elvis to generate that form. And then the next shift in rock and roll, Elvis wasn't going to come up with a shift that like the Beatles did. It was going to take a new perspective to come up with it. Because if you're locked in the old paradigm, it's like having the yellow lenses on. You can't think outside the box. No matter how hard you try, you are confined within the paradigm. So, how does this deal with Chester Carlson? Chester Carlson walked into Kodak in the 50s, and he had invented the xerography process. Wasn't called that yet, but basically he could take a document and reproduce a copy of it by using ink and on a shifting plate, and he brought out a copy of this black and white document for the engineers and the people at Kodak,
And they said, well, we're moving on to color photography. What good is it if you can make black and white copies? So Kodak thought they were in the business or moving to the business of color photography, and all they could see was the photography side of it and the fact it was moving to color. It never occurred to them that it could replace the mimeograph and it could be used to produce copies of black and white documents. So that's being stuck in your paradigm and not being able to look outside. I'll just give you one more example, and then we'll move on to politics or something else. But the Swiss had, you know, about 90% of the watch market in the 1950s, 60s, and their engineers actually created the quartz watch. Now, up until then, watches for hundreds of years had been made of fine moving parts, and the Swiss perfected them. And they were quite expensive, some of them, but they kept perfect time, and they were marvels of engineering. Tiny gears, worked flawlessly together, all of that. Well, when the quartz watch was created, there are no moving parts in a quartz watch. Well, you got the hands on the clock, but you don't need gears to move it around. So their engineers came up with this, and they went to the management of the Swiss watch companies and said, hey, guess what we've got? We got a new kind of watch. And they said, essentially, this is not a watch. It has no moving parts. We're not interested in this. We make fine, precise timepieces. This is something else. And they didn't even bother patenting it. They essentially gave it to the Japanese, or they let the Japanese have that technology. And within 20 years, Japan controlled 70% of the world's watch making business. One final example, then we'll wrap this up about paradigms, paradigm shifts, and lenses. It's often said that the decline of railroads happened in this country because the railroad companies didn't understand what business they were in. They thought they were in the railroad business. They didn't understand they were in the transportation and shipping business. If they had, when we built the interstate highway system, they would have diversified and started buying trucks and tractor trailer trucks and hauled stuff across the country in addition to carrying stuff by rail. But they thought, said, no, we are a railroad company. We're going to expand. We're going to buy more rail cars. We're going to put down more track. Didn't occur to them they were actually in the transportation business. That's being stuck in your own paradigm. So AT&T went through this a few years ago, and to their credit, they got outside of it because maybe it's because of the railroad example. But basically, they didn't stop and say, we are a telephone company. We're in the telephone business. No, 15 years ago. Now, it didn't stop them from having to spin off units and downsize, but they bought McCaw Cellular back when I was first working for AT&T or somewhere in the early 80s. Early to mid 80s, and then they bought cable companies, right? It was very clear that they understood they were in the communication business, not just the telephone business. So that's a quick lesson on paradigms and paradigm shifts, and I'm sure you can think of examples in your own world of ways in which the thinking within the organization you work for, your own thinking, is confined by the existing paradigm you think within, right? This is what gets people stuck in their relationships the way they are. They think that, you know, they can't break out of the patterns they have with their spouse or their child in terms of communication. No, you can always break out of those patterns. You have to be willing to step outside the paradigm. The term think outside the box is overused, but it's right in one regard, that it's an issue of how do you think differently about an issue? How do you take off those yellow lenses and not stop seeing the world as yellow, stop seeing your child as a complainer or as a problem, stop seeing your spouse as a complainer, and see the world without the lenses and then figure out where to go from there. You might just invent the next quartz watch as within the relationship. We'll take a break, and the Andy Finn Show will be back with Carl Rove, commentary and summary after this.